This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
It's time for Bookends. Kia ora, welcome to Bookends with Ruth Todd and Maureen Rat. And today I'm hogging the program, Ruth.
Welcome to the interview,
yes,
Maureen.
Yes, exactly. I've got two books that deal with climate change in different ways.
One could be more topical.
Exactly. One's a new novel from Dunedin writer Chris Else, and which is slightly dystopian, apocalyptic. No, that's probably the wrong word, but never mind. And then quite a wonderful book from science writer Rebecca Priestley about her time in Antarctica and, you know, some of her personal story as well. "15 Million Years in Antarctica is the latest book from Rebecca Priestley. Rebecca is Associate Professor at the Science and Society Group at Victoria University of Wellington, and she's won many awards for her science writing. She wrote the acclaimed Mad on Radium, New Zealand in the Atomic Age. She's been the editor of several major anthologies, and the latest of which is Dispatches from Continent 7, an anthology of Antarctic science. This, of course, is a very personal story, but it, again, is full of fascinating and quite disturbing facts about 15 million years in Antarctica. Rebecca, what made you decide to tell your own story along with the stories of your trips to Antarctica and your work in this area?
I guess I was just really itching to tell the story, to write this book. I'd been to Antarctica, well, I've been three times, and I'd written lots of magazine articles for The Listener, and I had produced video lectures for an online course I teach at Victoria University. But the whole time I was there, I was also writing my own journals, sort of, you know, a sort of almost constant narration of what was going on. And I did loads and loads of interviews with scientists, but was only ever able to use a, you know, tiny little snippets of them in magazine articles because, you know, the word limits I had to stick to. So I guess I had this sense that I had a much, much bigger and much more personal story to tell about my trips. And then on a sabbatical from my position here, I enrolled in an MA in creative writing at the International Institute of Modern Letters. And I didn't quite realise I was going to write an entire book about Antarctica. I thought I was going to write a series of science essays, some of which were going to be about Antarctica. But, yeah, Antarctica just consumed me, really. I just found I had so much to say.
And I think melding it with a personal story, a memoir of sorts, makes it makes a lot of those stories and facts sort of jump out in comparison, I think, because you've added this personal dimension to the whole scientific, you know, the body of what we know about the place. You've put it in that context.
Well, I guess part of that was trying to take the reader along with me, in a sense, but also, you know, I've written about climate change a lot in magazine articles, but I also know that, you know, bombarding people with facts doesn't really help change people's minds, doesn't kind of provoke them into taking action. So writing in a much more personal way, and I guess also being really honest about how concerned I am about climate change and what we're doing to the planet, and to also give a bit of an insight into the scientists who are working on these problems. So I was spending a lot of time with scientists in Antarctica who are paleoclimatologists looking at the past climate of Antarctica, and getting clues from that about what we're likely to experience in the future as our planet warms. Just giving more insight into them as human beings, and the sort of work that they're doing, the very hard work they're doing to get this information, and to talk about their fears and anxieties as well. I hoped that this might be a more sort of engaging and immediate way for people to think about these really sort of important and quite scary and serious topics.
Yes, it can be overwhelming. You're a mother of young children as well, and so you have to deal on a day-to-day basis with their, you know, curiosity and, and I'm sure at times sense of dread about what they're hearing.
Yeah, there is a bit of hope at the end of my book,
but there's
a lot of dread sort of along the way.
But a lot of humour as well. And I think you were, well, you couldn't have not talked about this, the fact that you have been consumed with anxiety and found it really, really difficult to sit in a aeroplane seat for 5 or 8 hours, go out into the white wilderness.
Yeah, and I guess I was partly trying to address this misconception that because I've been to Antarctica a few times and had other sorts of adventures like that, that I'm incredibly intrepid and brave, and I'm not. So I just wanted to be really honest about the anxiety that I have about flying and the sort of impact that can have on me and my sort of more generalised issues with anxiety, which I know a lot of people have. And it's been really great the way that people who have read this have then opened up to me about their own anxieties. So it sort of it helps justify for me putting that sort of stuff into the book.
We all, you know, almost universally, maybe I'm just saying that as a nationally rather than universally, there's a huge fascination about the fact that we are so close to Antarctica, and it seems almost and it's, you know, within easy reach, although I know it takes a lot to go there. But for somebody like me to be able to read and go with you to places like that is all I need.
Oh, good.
Yes. But there is, you know, ongoing fascination with the continent, and that must help in some ways, that people do want to read about it, do want to read about what people do down there, want to know about the people and what sort of people they are and how they survive down there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, there's some dominant narratives about what it's like in Antarctica. There's all the heroic age narratives. And then, I mean, if you look at, like, TV series like Continent 7, there's all these sort of rugged scientists in very dangerous situations. And that's the way it was presented and the way Antarctic science is often presented. So I've kind of got a slightly different perspective on things. Yeah, there's not a lot of ruggedness going on around me, but also I talk a lot about the incredible focus on safety that happens when you go down to Antarctica with Antarctica New Zealand, and that for me was very reassuring. Yeah, trying to present a different sort of Antarctic visitor, I guess.
Yes, and I think that's very endearing, and as I say, it helps bring the people that you went with and met down there, it builds them into real people and people who have the same foibles as the rest of us, but also, you know, incredible amount of respect for what they do down there and what they've been able to learn.
Yeah, I think whatever you do down there, it's hard work. It's you don't have to be tough to spend time down there, but you can't be too precious about things, is the way a friend of mine put it. Yeah,
and we need people like you and the artists that go there, the writers, the poets, the dancers, everybody going down and bringing back their perspectives has been so important, I think.
Yeah, well, it does help to engage a wider range of people, I think, and to engage people at different levels, emotional as well as intellectual.
Do you feel that you are now branded with the Antarctic brand, so to speak? That's not a very good term, but if you know what I mean, that you are now totally identified with with the Antarctic?
Well, I hope so. I mean, I think even if I never go back, it's going to carry on being a very important place to me, and I think I'll keep. I don't know if I'll keep writing about it, but it'll be there somehow in my work and whatever I do next, I think.
Yes, because it couldn't help but inform whatever you do next. Are you Are you likely to go back down there again?
I don't know. I think having completed this book, there's kind of sort of a symmetry to three trips, and I guess if I went back, I would have to have a good reason. I'd have to know what I was going to do there, and it would have to be something different or additional to what I've already done. Yeah, I don't just want to go back there because I want to.
No. And, you know, for you, you're able to now, well, you've been doing it for some time, the communicating science in a very accessible way is something that you're totally involved with now, isn't it?
Yeah, I've been doing that for, well, decades now, yeah.
And been awarded for it. So have you another, is there something else that's piquing your interest at the moment?
Too many things. I think I've got lots and lots of ideas, but they haven't quite coalesced into a grand plan just yet, yeah. But I did visit Ushuaia earlier this year for an Antarctic conference, and it was very interesting being in a place like that that is so focused on Antarctica but not Antarctica itself. So I've been thinking a bit about that and about some other similar sorts of places that I might be visiting soon. Yeah, so thinking about Antarctica from New Zealand or from other parts of the world without actually having to go there is something I'm quite interested in now.
Well, I just have to thank you for doing all the hard work on my behalf, and I'm sure I've read many books about Scott and Shackleton, especially Shackleton, and I've always appreciated that I was in a warm, dry, safe place while I was reading them. But and the same thing in your book, to be able to go with you and experience it and hear about all the remarkable work that's going on there was a real privilege. So thank you, Rebecca.
Thank you.
The book is called 15 Million Years in Antarctica. It's written by Rebecca Priestley and it's published by Victoria University Press.
You're listening to Bookends on Plains FM 96.9.
Waterline is the latest novel from Dunedin writer Chris Else. Chris has had a long career in publishing, both as a writer, but also as a literary agent and a manuscript assessor. He's twice been the national president of the New Zealand Society of Authors and also been the chair of the board of directors, Copyright Licensing Limited. So very, very involved in all aspects of writing and publishing. Waterline is described as a literary speculative novel. And I know, Chris, that you were very keen to write a pacey plot, something that kept people going.
Yes, I was. Yes, I was. Yeah, the story was the main thing, really, in the book. Yeah.
So, set the scene for us, speculative and dystopian.
Yes, those weren't really the focus of my attention. I mean, that idea was there right from the start. But I would see, I guess, the world, which is in crisis, as being much a metaphor for the life of the main character, really, who is a woman in her late 30s. And the book is really about the problems that she faces, I suppose, in kind of losing the status she's always had. She's come from a privileged background, and for various reasons, she's in a situation where she and her family, her husband and her two teenage kids, have to move from the capital to a small town. And during the course of the move, she gets separated from her husband and gets into some difficulties I suppose, finding her way in around this new world she's in, which is nothing like she's been used to.
Waterline really refers to the fact that the waterline is changing as we are anticipating it's going to, and in this case it has, and it's that's been one of the reasons for their lives being submerged.
Yes, that's true. I mean, the main financial reason is that they lost their quite luxurious house because of its it was a movable house, but for various reasons they delayed moving it, and it got destroyed in a storm. And of course, it was a beach property, and it wasn't insured, so they were. For that reason, they are in a serious financial straits. I think the idea of waterline was, of course, the idea of the sea and where it encroaches on the land or where it's at. But I also had the idea of the plimsoll line on a boat, which is a kind of a balance, and the sense that perhaps the idea of a boat sinking maybe and. Whether or not we were talking about a ship of fools.
and whether they made it into the life raft or not. And where the life raft ended up. So they wash up to carry it on. They wash up in this small town called Bight, and the weather is terrible. It's constantly being assailed by storms and rain, so it's very hard to continue on, to keep your head above water, isn't it? Quite literally.
Yes, that's right.
Metaphorically. And she loses a husband along the way. They get separated, as you say. And then all these robots and personal whatevers are there. So you don't know whether you're dealing with humans or whether you're dealing with AI, artificial intelligence.
That's right. Yeah, I was the idea of AI was one of the things I wanted to explore a little bit, because we hear a lot of talk about how AI is going to take over and kill us all. But I think the more immediate danger is getting involved in a bureaucracy. It's a bit like having one of those telephone systems when you're trying to call up a corporation, and it works perfectly well if you have a straightforward query, but if you don't, you find yourself deeply frustrated and getting quite angry, really. Yes.
Yeah, you're punching into sort of nothing, really, not getting any response. So she and her husband are both caught separately in these situations where they can't quite work out where they are, but a mysterious stranger comes into them.
Yes, I'm not sure he's quite tall, dark, and handsome. He's certainly tall.
No, he's big and powerful.
Yes.
So he. Where did he come from?
Where did he come from? That's a good question. I think he appeared because the story needed him, not because that I thought of him at the beginning. I mean, I want as part of this kind of descent, if you like, into a much more really simple and I suppose in a way crude existence. I had to have some characters who were already in that situation, and he turned out to be one of those. I suppose you'd call him really the leader of a gang, and well, he certainly was a leader of the gang at one point in his life. He's now become much more a more responsible leader of a community, which is a low-tech community, which is in contrast, I suppose, with most of the other high-tech stuff that's around the other environments in the book.
And there is a sense that that is the community that is going to provide some optimism, some hope.
Yes, well, it seems to me to be a sane option, whereas the other things, the technology, and of course that includes all the the social media and those kinds of things, that has become slightly mad in the book, and I kind of feel it's slightly mad in our world already.
Yes, it's horrifying when you read this. You can't just keep saying, oh, well, that's speculative, that's something that's a possibility in the future, because a lot of what you describe is there now. And
yes, most of it is just really an exaggeration of what's currently happening, and pushing those things to just a little bit further down the road, I suppose. Yeah.
So at the same time as you wanted to tell a gripping human story with a lot of the sort of emotional stuff that attaches to that, you also want to signal what could happen to us and make us aware of the consequences of what we're living with now.
I think it's, yeah. I mean, I'm not a futurist. I wouldn't pretend to be. And I think that, any attempt I made to guess the future would almost undoubtedly turn out to be wrong. So what I was trying to do really was to get people to think about the trends that are there already and where they might lead, and whether this is the right kind of picture or not, I don't know. Looking at our values and our preoccupations, I suppose. I mean, one of the things in the book which I think is important is the question of status, and I think that in our society we have almost an instinctive preoccupation with our status, and a lot of that status for a lot of people is bound up in the consumerism. And I think that the problem, one of the problems about climate change, is actually the fact that we can't abandon, it's very difficult for us to abandon the things that we've become used to, because it's reducing our status, and we've got to really find ways of having status, looking at our status without it being involving all the consumerist type stuff that we're currently engaged in.
Yeah, it's sobering. But on the other hand, you want to tell a good story. You want to engage us with the characters,
and
also provide us with some light relief. There's some funny parts in this.
Well, yes, some of it's funny, some of it's pretty plaqued.
Yes. Oh, yes. Well, that's often where you get your points across, isn't it?
That's right.
Black comedy.
Quite dark humour, yes.
So is this... you obviously enjoyed writing this, Chris. Does this give you hope for more fiction along these lines?
I don't know. Yes, I mean, Quentin, my publisher, asked me the other day whether I was thinking about a sequel, and I hadn't.
Yes, but I wondered about that too.
Yes, but I mean, there certainly could be a sequel. I have absolutely no idea what it would involve. I'd really have to come up with a new story that I wanted to tell. But it's possible. Yes.
Well, who knows? We're left on a something of an optimistic note, which is good. Can't resolve everything, but people have come together, and there does seem hope for the community. So,
yeah, where I wanted to leave it really was not really resolving anything, but really giving the feeling that people could cope with whatever was going to happen.
Yes.
And I think that's certainly where I wanted Stella, the main character, to finish up. That she'd come around to the point of feeling, yes, being confident that she was in the right place and that she could cope with what was going to come.
Well, it was certainly a great read, so thank you very much, Chris.
Oh, good, thank you.
The book is called Waterline. It's by Chris Else, and it's published by Quentin Wilson Publishing. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, thanks, Maureen.
And join us, Maureen Rout and Ruth Todd, next Tuesday on Bookends on Plains FM 96.9.